Hi, everybody. This is Christina Merkley with MakeYourMark.com, and I am continuing my series of interviews with diverse colleagues from across the graphic recording and graphic facilitation spectrum. So today's call is with recorder and information architect Peter Durant of Alpha Chimp Studio in Pittsburgh. And what I'd like to do is I'm just going to start off reading a little bio blurb about Peter, and then I'll get him on the line, and we will chat and ask all sorts of questions. So Peter Durant is the creative director of Alpha Chimp Studio, Inc., a graphic facilitation firm located in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As an illustrator, painter, traveler, and graphic facilitator, Peter has been an entrepreneur all of his life. He's worked on over 100 corporate projects in North America, Europe, Africa, and Australia. His varied career combines graphic facilitation, information graphics, visual learning, and web documentation. Recently, Peter has gotten involved in the emerging field of social enterprise. He works closely with the Pittsburgh Social Enterprise Accelerator to co-design a new media methodology for aiding not-for-profits in the design of revenue-generating business models. In addition to supporting corporate events across the country, Peter is also a series producer for Globe Shakers, an online radio program offered through IT Conversations. And he serves as the founding editor for the Center for Graphic Facilitation and maintains his own very active blog on art and design. Peter Durant holds a BFA in visual communication from Washington University in St. Louis and an MFA in industrial design from the Academy of Fine Arts in Krakow, Poland, where he was a Rotary International and ambassadorial scholar. You're going to have to help me with this, Peter, when you come on. And he currently lives with his wife and daughter in the historic Mexican Moore Streets on Pittsburgh's north side. So welcome to you, Peter.
Thank you, Christina.
So this sounds very interesting. What was going on that you were in Poland and you were a Rotary scholar?
Well, first of all the different experiences that you've mentioned are impossible to put on a resume. That's why I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. No one's ever wanted to give me a job because they can't understand how it all fits together.
Yeah, but how do you slap a label on that?
Exactly. What I love is that everybody I know in this field has come to graphic facilitation or information graphics through just the oddest path. And one of my superheroes is out of Florida, Brian Coffin, and he went to the Colorado School of Mines and was an engineer for the Army Corps of Engineers and is one of the best graphic facilitators and model makers I've ever seen. And other people come to this from business or from education or the sciences or some other odd job that doesn't even have a title.
Exactly. That's what I found talking with different people and finding what their roots or entry points were. I think you're right. It's from the whole gamut, which makes it
all of us are struggling with language. You know, we're making up these words and titles, and they're really hard to explain.
Yeah, and it's so experiential that it's not until folks really get in that the big aha or light bulb kind of gets lit.
Exactly. That's why we changed our company tagline to, "You talk, we draw, the pictures tell the story."
Oh, that's
and if people still don't get it, I call my doodle for dollars.
I like that one. I say that too. So I just want to make sure that the folks who are going to be listening to this call, so I'll have it posted next to it, but just to mention two sites that people can take a look at what you do and what you're all about. One is your studio site, which is www.alphachimp, like big old chimp, alphachimp.com. And then the other one, which I really love, I love both, but you have a blog that is really wonderful, very eclectic, a lot of art and design, a lot of information architect, graphic facilitation stuff, and it's at www.graphicfacilitation.com. So just so folks know to check those two sites out. So tell me a bit, Peter, there's two reasons I wanted to talk with you. One is that you're connected on the east coast of the states, which is kind of unique from my perspective, coming from kind of the west coast school of things. So I wanted to check in with you about what's happening on the east coast and who are these groups of folks who are using graphics and what are they doing. And then the second thing, maybe in the latter part of this call, I really want to dive in and ask you about technology. Because from what I've seen that you're doing, that I think is really exciting and really outside of what I'm doing, is the whole integration and documentation side of this. So how to use, we can create all this wonderful stuff in meetings, but how to integrate that in via technology so people are really doing something with it and getting good continued value from it. So maybe let's go back to the first one. Tell me a bit about kind of the East Coast collection of people and where this came out of, or maybe how you connected into the work.
Well, what's interesting is both questions are actually intimately related. You said East Coast, West Coast, and the way I see it, it's more like family trees. Most people who meet you or meet me, you know, they've never heard of this way of working or this career path. So they assume we came up with it all by ourselves. But in fact, you know, and I know that we stand on the shoulders of other talented people who taught us, you know, in the beginning, or we found them after we started. Mm-hmm. My family tree, I trace back to Matt and Gail Taylor of M.G. Taylor, and I started doing this right after I returned to the United States from Poland. I went to Poland right after the Berlin Wall came down. I had just graduated from art school, and I really wanted to go to that part of the world because I knew that there was a colossal system change taking place that the world had not seen, at least since, you know, let's say World War II. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be there. So I had just found out that there was a sister city program. I was in St. Louis at the time, and that led me to Poland. And I spent about 4 years just sort of figuring out what was happening there in this new phase after communism, mm-hmm. while a whole society was trying to figure out how to operate as a country again, because the East Bloc was really ruled by a system, the Soviet system. What I found myself doing was falling back on my art training as a designer and illustrator and storyteller, and using that to help me understand all the connections and how the system worked. And then in my job, I was working with consultants from Norway and Sweden, Germany, and the United States, who were there in Poland helping a local municipality, just a little city, figure out how to keep the lights on, take out the garbage, collect taxes, all the boring stuff that people don't think of when they're overthrowing a government. You know, you kick the parents out of the house, and then you have to feed yourself, you know.
Right, and you have to figure out how to bring in that all that money and make everything work. So.
Exactly. So I found that people were asking me to do more and to create visuals that helped explain these complex business and social issues.
Wow, so that started for you even in Poland.
It was just kind of the way that I worked. So I didn't think of it as, you know, a new thing I was doing. It was just a natural process. Mm-hmm. Because I always had a journal, I always had a sketchbook, and I was always scribbling and doodling and diagramming and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I had a student, a 16-year-old girl named Kate, and she had taken a course on mind mapping in Poland. Mm-hmm. And she taught me that. She said, hey, this is something you might really enjoy. So she introduced me to Tony Buzan's mind map book, and she was just using it to study English and to do vocabulary words.
Yeah.
So I started experimenting with it, and it kind of stuck with me. But it wasn't until several years later, after I'd come back from my experience in Eastern Europe and was living in Chicago, working for a temp agency, trying desperately not to gnaw my arm off from boredom, that a friend of mine who worked at the temp agency said, we got a weird job request, and I don't know who to give it to, so I'm giving it to you. And that was a request by Ernst & Young accounting firm that was starting as part of its consulting practice in the 90s to build facilities for doing large-scale systems work, mergers and acquisitions, implementation of software like SAP and ERP across factories and geographic locations.
Huge projects.
Yeah, huge projects. And they had asked Matt and Gail Taylor to teach them this collaborative way of designing solutions. And the tailors used graphic facilitation as a key tool in their process. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of staggered into this. I showed up, you know, from this temp agency, and the guy who was interviewing me said, okay, I'm going to start talking, and you take this big whiteboard, and you just start drawing.
Wow, you're kidding, just like that.
Yeah. So
newspaper ad or a temp ad. Wow.
Yeah. You know, I just started doodling and scribbling around. I had no idea what he was talking about. But he turned around and looked at it and said, that's great, you're hired.
Unbelievable.
So that's where I really officially started.
And that was when? I'm sorry, the 90s?
1995.
Yeah, mid-90s.
I'm sorry, 1996.
Yep,
10 years
exactly
ago.
Exactly the same time as I started. Yeah.
So I think at that time, because the economies of North America and Europe were growing so swiftly, and it was the rise of the Internet, and just there was so much speed involved, and everybody was looking for new ways of working. And so Ernst & Young took this process and began to replicate it, as well as the physical spaces for doing this collaborative design work, all over North America, all over Europe, and into Australia and parts of Asia. So this young crew of us, these knowledge workers and graphic facilitators who were all pretty much in their 20s, we were in charge of going to these new locations and teaching people who had MBAs, PhDs, years of business experience, how to draw to, you know, find solutions more effectively.
Yeah, very cool. So combining all that kind of typical consulting practice, change management.
Yep.
You know, I worked a little bit with Ernst & Young and some of the other consulting firms, and most of them have you know, very strategic processes that they put their clients through. So I'm imagining that what you're doing is working with how they typically engage their clients, but weaving in these kind of interactive graphics and ways of kind of adult learning practices.
Exactly.
So people really get it.
And what's interesting about Matt and Gail is Matt is an architect. His architecture degree came straight from Frank Lloyd Wright. It's a handwritten letter.
Wow.
And he just, at the age of 16, drove from California to Wisconsin, showed up at Taliesin, Frank Lloyd Wright's estate there, and said, I want to be an architect. And then his wife, Gail, her background was in early child education and adult education. She was a second grade teacher for years, then began working for a community college during the 70s, and they told her, you know what? What we found is adults really, they can't learn. So adult education is more like entertainment, a hobby. And she said, what? Adults can't learn? And that question about, you know, well, how do adults learn, really drove her to explore all of these issues that then became a core part of the M.G. Taylor methodology. And that was combined with Matt's experience with building skyscrapers in New York and having to work with all these stakeholders and unions and carpenters and electricians and city-county governments. And his main pain was there's got to be a faster way to get everybody on the same page so that it's one design that multiple people are working on.
Right. And it's fascinating when you start doing this research about the field, how many of these early people were architects. Doyle and Strauss, who wrote the How to Make Meetings Work, and Interaction Associates, both architects. So a lot of folks. So interesting to hear that Matt Taylor was, and of course you and I, we're going to appreciate the adult ed perspective of how important that is for this work and its roots.
Well, many of the people who began to join the M.G. Taylor Network, the Ernst & Young, which then became the Capgemini network.
Uh-huh.
They, most of them, came from backgrounds in theater, in fine arts, and in the military.
Yeah.
Which is it's very interesting because I think people who are used to doing theater work and people who have been on collaborative teams in the military are used to getting together and saying, "Okay, what's my role?"
Mm-hmm. How do I fit into the bigger picture?
Yeah, and then working to figure out what's the mission, you know. Whereas that's counterintuitive in the business world, where it's not what's my role, but it is what is my position, who do I report to, who is the client, what is my relationship, whose opinion has more value, that sort of thing. And that's a crass, you know, oversimplification, but it just seemed to be something that was evident in the environment we were working in. And the other group that I think is really great when it comes to visual learning are engineers, which get lambasted and sort of pigeonholed to being right or left brain thinkers, you know, and very linear. But they are all about process, and they're all about how do things work. How do they become more optimal? What is the elegance in the design?
Mm-hmm.
And every engineer has to work with a lot of different people from a lot of different areas, either marketing or business development, or people who work with materials. And so they're used to taking a lot of information and trying to synthesize it.
Having to connect, you know, they're working on some sort of system. So all these different
exactly.
types of systems, thinking of the whole. And,
yeah, there are inputs and there are outputs, and that's what a system is when they're all connected.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I do when I meet with clients and when I give presentations or work with individuals is their first impression is, oh, this is about being an artist, you know, and I'm not an artist, and I can't draw,
right.
and I can't draw a straight line.
Uh-huh.
And I just tell them that, no, this is about understanding systems and using very simple visual tools to illustrate complexity.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing, do you find a lot of people are approaching you that they're curious about wanting to learn how to do this, saying that you can break it down?
We get the typical request will be, like I had one this morning. This guy calls and he says, hi, I would like to learn how graphic facilitation can help with strategic planning, which is obviously something he's read off either our website or somebody else's website, or he's put into a Google search, right?
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I start the conversation and just say, oh, well, you know, what do you do? What are you trying to solve? And how did you find us? And what are you interested in? And invariably, it all comes back to that childlike excitement when people discover that there's a different way of just doing normal work. And so that usually is the first trigger. And whether it's an existing client that we have, that maybe a new person sees us doing graphic facilitation as part of a project, or it's somebody who's discovered it on the web, or somebody who's done something like a mind mapping course, that light bulb goes on. They're like, oh, wow, yeah, this is something that, yeah, this will work. And then their second question is, whoa, who does this? And it's really hard to find us, you know, because
mm-hmm.
there's not a language to talk about it.
Yeah, and it takes people quite a long time even to get to, oh, okay, and these are just one of many terms, but graphic recording, graphic facilitation.
Architecture, visual architecture, information graphics. I mean, it's all this big collage of graphical kind of terms.
Yeah, but it's neat now because with the search engines, people, at least I'm finding it on my site, people are finding us. And it's neat because it's also uniting and linking us together as a community of practitioners. So you've got something really cool on the graphicfacilitationblog.com site. With tell us a bit about this wrapper map and what's going on there.
Well, the way it started is I was part of a panel, and this panel had lots of astute people there, and so it had Dr. Smith, who's the head of the Center for Children's Cognitive Sciences at the MIT University, you know, all these long titles, and then it got to Peter Durand, Scribe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, dang it, I need something highfalutin at the end there. So I said, yeah, I should be the director of the Center for Graphic Facilitation. Even though no one will know what that is, it sounds important. So it started in vanity, Christina. It started as just feeling
ashamed. Please own it, Peter.
But then I thought, you know what, is there a Center for Graphic facilitation? Is there a resource out there? And there are all these companies and individuals who are doing this kind of work, all, you know, with different flavors and different skill sets and the like. But I couldn't find sort of one place. So that coincided, well, actually that germinated for a year or two. And then starting 2 or 3 years ago when blogs really came into fruition, that gave me the tool to start something that could grow into a community website, that we could have multiple contributors just adding to the knowledge base and keeping the discussion going and make it something that's really alive.
Mm-hmm.
In conjunction with that, there are all these other, they're called mashups. It's where, you know, one technology uses the data from another technology. And Frapper is a mashup that uses Google Maps plus a little interface for people to put in their name and address. And so I put a Frapper map on the Center for Graphic Facilitation website and just started with a few people. I think you may have been one of the people that I just put on the map and then emailed you and let you know that you were on the map.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. But I sort of seeded it. You know, I scouted around, and there were people that I liked and that I knew of, but I really wanted to branch out to these other family trees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's taken on a life of its own, and we have people that have put themselves on the Atlas, we call it, who are in Africa. They're in New Zealand. They're in Spain, France, England, Canada, North America. Nobody from Latin America, so if anybody's out there, you can.
Oh, I know a couple people. I'll have to email
great.
Them so they can get on that. Yeah.
And it has just been really fun to see all these names and faces pop up.
Yeah.
And the goal is for all of us to see each other and to see that there are many of us and we're all over the world, and we don't have to feel freakish or unique or alone, and we can learn from each other.
Yeah, and there is a bit of a 100th monkey syndrome happening. We're popping up all over the place, and
yep.
I think you just do a really nice service. There is another, like a grassroots association in the field, International Forum of Visual Practitioners.
Yeah.
And that's been very volunteer-run, and that's what that website, ifvp.org, its purpose was to serve, but I really think you've kind of taken that further where it's perhaps lagged a little bit on the other site, Peter, and it's really nice to see.
Well, actually, one of the contributors to the graphicfacilitation.com is Randy Agerbeck, who
mm-hmm.
has a big part of the, what is the acronym, the IVP?
IFVP.
International
Forum, yeah.
So she has, and the real, I think the difference between the two sites is the one is built around the yearly gathering where people can physically get together and share techniques and experiences and get to know each other. And then this is really closer to, it's a blog, you know, it's a way to capture updated information, new articles, references, websites that may be useful to the community.
Yeah, I think it's really great. And you do a nice service. People can post
Thank you.
Their workshops or post their articles. I've certainly done that. And it's you know, really great because it is making visible this network and this community that I think is larger than most of us think it is, and it's really exciting to see it start to manifest and become visible.
Well, another aspect is, as you know, there's a pretty steep there's a steep curve in the sales cycle, so. You may be talking to somebody who's interested in using this as part of their business process, but they need to be able to understand the value, quantify it, validate it, and then upsell it to their superiors.
Right.
It's really hard if it's perceived that you're the only one that does this in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier if you have a title, and it's even easier if there's a whole community of people who did this that you can point to and say, I am part of this community. Take a look. You know, we are very rich and very diverse, and we're very smart.
And lots of legitimacy about the different clients who have been using us over the years. And I find, too, when clients see that, it might be It might be for me that now that I'm in British Columbia in a big education process of moving to a part of the country that doesn't have a lot of this work, it really helps clients to kind of the legitimacy factor of seeing who else is using it. I might be working with a school district, and for them to see that, you know, HP or some other very well-known name has been using this methodology for years, it goes a long way in helping people appreciate that, yes, it is much more than pretty pictures.
Exactly.
Great. So, so many things to ask you.
Well, one of the questions, one of the topics that you and I had talked about was how to effectively, or what technical tools are people using
yes.
to effectively capture and document this kind of work? Would
yes,
that be valuable?
Yes, I'd like to hear, because I think you're at least, you know, the methods that I'm using and some of the other people have spoken to on the previous calls are obviously, you know, digital cameras. So bringing our cameras on site, shooting down the materials, and you know, creating JPEG and TIFF files that can be integrated into reports. And most of my stuff tends to be, you know, standard meeting documents. And now I'm starting to hear that there's some other more progressive things happening, and I think you're really tapped into that. So if you could share. And looking at your materials, we've never met in person, but I've seen from your sites, it looks like that you work on foam core board. Is that right?
Yes.
Great. And Jim Shannon does that as well. Leslie and I are both working with the large poster paper, so regardless of the surface, something has to happen. People can't, or maybe they do too, but they can't really walk around with big foam core boards under their arm and take that from site to site with them. So what is it that you're doing to make this more user-friendly and doable on the back end?
Well, first of all, in terms of the experience, the on-site experience and materials, there's another option that people use, and it requires a greater budget, and that is shipping in white walls.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple of different companies out there. One of them is Kinetic Energies out of South Carolina, and they produce lightweight white walls that go together like IKEA furniture. You just have a little Allen wrench, little hexagonal wrench,
yep.
And they handle all the logistics. So you figure out how many white walls you need, if they're single panel or double panel or triple panel. They're roughly 4 feet by 6 feet tall. And so I've done lots of events where we have a mobile environment shipped in
mm-hmm.
so that we can have participants doing a lot of the scribing and graphic facilitation and white wall work. Secondly, there are a lot of new products that are coming out now, like roll-on white boards, sort of a mylar or acrylic roll that's sticky on one side, and you can put it on a hotel wall and stretch it across, and you have a large dry erase surface.
Mm.
Some people use something that's called shower board. It's used for framing in very cheap showers, and it's essentially masonite with some sort of laminate or and I don't know if it's enamel, but it's a dry erasable white surface. And sometimes they'll just have Home Depot or another
yeah.
store ship a whole bunch of those and use easels. So there's a whole combination of things that people are using, but it does get pretty cumbersome, whether it's rolled up flip charts or boxes of foam core, it's
mm-hmm.
the question is what to do afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started, what we had to do, because a digital camera cost probably $10,000 in 1996, is we had to actually redraw everything we did on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, scan it in, and then print it out
mm-hmm.
for copies for everybody. Now everything has moved to much more electronic, so we started building websites. And the pain that evolved there is every time you had a new project, you had to build a new website. Now what we at AlphaJump have been working on is developing a tool just for graphic facilitators and people who are in this life of doing events called Missing Link. And we're learning from all of the tools that we love out there. There's Flickr, which is for managing photographs. There's Google, which is just has a really simple interface. And there's a product called Basecamp, which is for project management and messaging and to-do lists. But we couldn't find anything that brought all of that together and was specifically built for events. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been working on for the last 6 months, is developing something that it's browser-based software, so people don't have to buy a package or download anything. They just use their browser.
It's all up on the web, so that's what it means, right? It's already hosted up there.
Exactly. And it uses a database, so you don't have to create web pages. What you're able to do is put in an agenda. You can create participant lists, breakouts, and then when you upload an image of your white wall or your flip chart, you can assign it to a place in the agenda. You can write a description of what it is, and you can put keyword tags on there.
Mm-hmm.
So later, when you log into your account, you can see all of your keywords. And you can just find every single image that you've uploaded that has to do with, say, customer service or complexity or whatever topic you've assigned. And so that's what we've been working on the last 6 months. And it really just came out of sheer annoyance and pain involved in building a website. It's like, there's got to be an easier way.
So then how are clients then able to access it? I'm assuming that if you create it, or you've got this space where all the documentation is going up online, then people are given access addresses or something to go and view it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, the way it works is if you create an event, you can determine whether it's public or private. So if it's private, in order to view it, you have to have a login and password. And then you invite people. You determine who is coming, and you just put in their first name, their last name, their email. And so all the people that you invite as participants, they get a password. And when they log in, they can only see the events that they have access to.
Great. And does it also, are you able to kind of have comments and kind of logging back and forth about stuff?
Well, the first version is more of a documentation tool. It's archiving what happened during an event. The next version that we're working on, we're trying to address that problem that occurs when you have something like a strategic planning session and you have all these great ideas and you have all these next steps, but then there's no way to track it.
Right.
So that one of our goals is to build something that you can not only document your event, but you can track who has decided what to do, by when, with whom, and post comments on either the different images or the different ideas that were generated, perhaps have online voting, like if you come up with 500 different ideas. But that's further down the line. Right now we're getting the current model very stable, and a very important decision that we had to make early was, are we going to make something that's only for the big players, the big companies, and it costs $35,000?
Right.
And my answer was no. It has to be for second and third world players. It has to be a subscription that people can either upgrade or downgrade. And when you do that, it just affects how much storage space and how many events you can manage at one time.
So you're like open it up to the spectrum of users. That's nice.
Exactly. So I wanted something that a Sunday school teacher could afford and use. That was my goal. Or somebody who maybe ran a whole department at a very large company and had to put on 200 events a year.
Right, totally scalable depending on who you are and your budget and your need and function.
Yeah, but to make it really, really simple.
Yeah, isn't that the key? Yeah, for folks like me who are not techie, and then so many of my clients, some of them are just fantastic and some are let's just say, a little lower on the adoption curve than even I am. So, yeah, that sounds really great, Peter. I'm glad that you're able to explain it a bit to us. What about a website for people to go check out? Is there a place to direct people?
Yes, it's missinglink.biz, B-I-Z.
Okay, or Z if you're in Canada. So let's kind of segues a little bit. You were talking about this whole spectrum of users, and you seem to have a bit of a soft spot for community development or social enterprise ventures. And in your bio, there's an accelerator that, that you're connected with in your location. What's that about, and how do you define social enterprise?
Well, this is an area that is building a lot of steam right now, and it is coming from a couple of different needs. One of them is that there are so many really serious social and environmental problems facing us right now, and anybody who's aware of anything knows that. The second thing is that the way that we've been dealing with these problems have not been fast enough, efficient enough, or effective enough. So the result is that people in the private sector are saying, hey, we've developed all these tools for doing business. Let's start applying them to social and environmental problems. And then people who are choosing to enter the fields of medicine, nonprofit, community development, economic development, they have exposure because more and more people are going in with master's degrees, right, with business degrees or science degrees, and they see all the tools that are available out there and processes. So this area of social enterprise and social innovation is the hybrid of those two. And the way it can manifest itself is either, let's say, there's somebody who's an entrepreneur. They have a good idea of how to make something better, cheaper, faster, and it solves a social or environmental problem. Mm. They start a social enterprise. It's for profit, but it's doing good. The second flavor of this is a nonprofit that's in the public sphere that is trying to implement a lot of these corporate tools or business practices that exist in the private sector. So the accelerator that I work with here in Pittsburgh, they are trying to connect entrepreneurs who have a social intention to best practices, and they are trying to connect private companies to social issues.
And are they helping with, obviously they're helping with the development and strategy side of things. Does funding come into it as well? How does that work?
It is. But where they position themselves, and there are more and more organizations like this, is operating less like a foundation or a government entity and more like a venture capitalist firm.
Mm.
So finding ideas that work and people that sort of have it, you know, they have the gumption and they have the experience. They just maybe need to be connected to capital, or they need a little coaching, or they need some capacity, you know, just in terms of administrative stuff and accounting and legal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they are really trying to use the principles of fast, cheap, and out of control, but to take on some of these huge problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on the larger scale now with the you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett teaming up and really focusing on these giant medical issues of malaria, AIDS, blindness, water filtration and purity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very exciting field and an exciting time. And they are really embracing all these new tools of graphic facilitation, of using online tools to help with community organizing and that sort of thing.
Oh, wonderful. And must feel really nice, because our graphic methods do help. And so isn't it nice to help organizations that are out there doing good work in the world and to support
and
that?
That would be my advice for anybody who's sort of getting started.
Yeah.
And maybe they're a little shy about approaching a business or a corporation, is volunteer. There are so many organizations out there that are doing good work, and they just need help. They need help getting their ideas out, getting them organized, coming up with a framework, and it's a great place to begin using these tools and building up a client base.
Mm-hmm. And again, do it in an area that you have some care and concern for. And
exactly.
It's all good all around. You're helping
yep.
them, and you're getting helped in the process. That's really beautiful. You're also very involved in this world through the Accelerator, and you're also a series producer for a radio online show called Globe?
Globe Shaking.
Globe Shaking. I was going to say Globetrotters, and I'm like, I was thinking the Globe and the basketball, no? Yeah, so that sounds very interesting. What are you doing there, and are you able to roll in graphics with that, given it's an audio version, or obviously it's going with your heart work that you're talking about with the Accelerator program?
Exactly, and I really got involved because I wanted to learn more about podcasting and how it works.
Mm.
And the original organization that started this was itconversations.com. And there's a man who started it all, Doug Kay, great guy, who was writing a book. He's based in California. He was writing a book on technology. He interviewed a lot of his friends who are old-timers in Silicon Valley. He recorded their conversations just like you are right now, and he posted them on his website just like
yep.
you're about to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those conversations became a lot more popular than the book. And so he mm-hmm. said, hey, there's something to this, and it was right as the tools for podcasting were coming into being. And so he started a whole channel dedicated to IT conversations,
mm-hmm.
just about technology and what it means. Well, after a while, there were so many conversations about so many topics that he said, you know, that we should really start a series of channels. So they have the Social Innovation Channel was the second channel started after IT Conversations.
Mm.
And Tim Zak, who's the president of the Accelerator, and I made a pitch just via email to start a program interviewing these social entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And we called it Globe Shakers because we wanted to really emphasize that this isn't about philanthropy. This isn't about nonprofits. This is about people who are changing the way that things are done and really shaking things up. So as series producer, that's what I do is I work with Tim. And we try to identify who are the people who have the big ideas, who are the people that are in the field trying to implement these big ideas, who is funding these, who is helping from a venture capital point of view, and who are the policy wonks, you know, who see how policies are changing to either encourage or inhibit this kind of growth.
You're so tapped into so many different exciting things that are happening. It's really wonderful, and I know with the graphic recording and graphic facilitation world, that's really a spin-off, too, of doing this work, that we get some flown in and tapped into so many cool things that are happening, and it's really nice if you're a person who likes to continually learn
yep.
and explore and you're curious. Leslie Salmon was talking about she's been doing this for 21 years now, and she's just a curious person, and she loves, like, what's this next meeting going to be about? What's the next event that she can, you know, help synthesize and bring to light? So I know those are one of the qualities for people entering this field, using the term lightly field, because it is quite broad. You touched on volunteering. I'm wondering, just as we kind of conclude, lots of folks who tap into the Make Mark site are, like you said earlier, they're very intrigued and wowed by this field, and they may start off as clients, but they're wanting to learn these methods themselves. Any other suggestions for folks? Volunteer, anything else that you tend to say to folks to develop a skill set, or if they want to be who you are, what would you suggest?
Steal everything.
Did you say steal?
Steal everything. So here's who I steal from. I steal from my favorite comic book artists.
Mm-hmm.
I steal from Calvin and Hobbes, which was my favorite comic strip.
Yeah.
I steal from Edward Tufte, who's the master of visualizing information.
Yeah.
I steal from Starbucks coffee houses, where I walk in and I see what they're doing on their little chalkboards there.
Mm.
I steal from graffiti artists. You know, everything that I look at, not everything, but when I'm looking at the world, I pick and choose, you know, what stuff I'm going to steal. Say, oh, I'm going to try that out. Kids, I mean, you go into an elementary school and look at what they're doing and what materials they're using and how they're capturing and displaying information and doing dioramas and whatever. You know, you can steal that and use it. It's just open to how people have told stories forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does go back 20,000, 40,000 years to the caves of Lascaux, where, you know, Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon then took young boys and women into dark caves, showed them stuff that was drawn up on cave walls at great peril, and said, this is what it's all about. Stab the bison right here with your stick. You know, we're still doing the same stuff, but...
Might not be bison, it's our modern-day version of bison, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful. And since you are so tapped into a lot of the new emerging technologies and these new cool... there goes. I forgot to star 70, and of course I'm getting a phone call. But let's conclude on your thoughts about the future of the field. And what do you see from your vantage point? Does the future look bright, or what do you think?
Well, I think that there are so many tools out there that can allow kids to work together and express themselves in a way that's never been possible. And there's a lot of talk, you know, about the dangers of the Internet and, you know, oh, these kids on MySpace. But if you look at what they're doing, they are composing personal narratives and using all sorts of visual and digital tools to do that in ways that we couldn't have dreamt of when we were that age. And so being open to that next generation, you know, and being aware that they're going to have all these tools at their disposal, and what we need to help them with is meaning and making meaning. And I think, Christina, what you do a lot of is not only make marks, but you make meaning, and you help people to understand more of the personal process that they're going through. That's never going to change, ever, ever, ever. People, as individuals and groups, are always struggling with, who am I, who are we, what are we going to do next, how are we going to do it? And if we, as facilitators who make the process easier, use all these tools that are emerging and all the tools that have been around for 20,000 years, you'll never run out of work, that's for sure.
And we're helping that evolution along, all these people becoming their next selves and their next entities in their organizations. So, wonderful stuff. Well, Peter, I just want to thank you so much for your time. I think this has been a really great conversation, and you've given folks listening a lot of different ideas about other ways that this work is applied. And I'll post up the different links that you've mentioned as well, so folks can access them and keep exploring and getting tapped into more folks in our network. So,
thanks for everything you're doing as well, Christina.
Yeah, my pleasure. And folks, keep tuned here to makemark.com, and again, Peter's sites with alphachimp.com and graphicfacilitation.com. We continue to post all sorts of information, articles, audios, et cetera, to help you learn more about this field and do whatever it is that you are called to do, however you're called to do it with these different methods that are available. So best of luck to everybody. Good night for now.